Hey, welcome back everybody to my podcast. This is the 64th episode after being off for over a month. I've been gone, busy, and if you follow me, you know why. This is an episode with Simon Cody, who's a good friend of mine, and we go way back, really way, way back. And today he talked about his venture as a head coach and the career that didn't work out. So you're going to hear the other side of the coaching world. You're going to hear what it means to get fired, what it means to deal with some identity issues if you had to identify yourself as a coach your whole life and all of a sudden you're not a coach anymore, what to do, and a whole bunch of challenges along the way and the transition into a new life, into a new career. So Simon was very candid and very open about it. He has no ego. He's one of the kindest and nicest person that I know. One of the nicest people that I know. And it was a pleasure talking to him. And also, this episode is sponsored by ProBalls.com. ProBalls.com is a statistical platform that you know very well if you follow this podcast. And if you're a basketball nerd like me, you are going to find a whole bunch of goodies on ProBalls.com. So go ahead and check it out whenever you can. Meanwhile, please enjoy this episode with my good friend, Simon Cody. Thanks. Simon, what's up, man? Welcome to my podcast.
How you doing? Glad to be here.
Well, this is my first podcast in a while because I was on a little break with all the things going on in June and beginning of July. I'm sure you followed it. You did. We were in touch. We've known each other now for, I was trying to go back in time. I think it's over 15 years now. And I wouldn't be able to do this podcast about the topics that we're going to talk about if we weren't friends like we are. You know, I think that the topics we're going to dive into require a lot of deep connections and security between the two parties, and also very mature and self-assured perception of things as you have. So I'm glad you're coming on, and I'm glad that you are, let's say, willing to talk about the things that we're going to dive into today.
Yeah, I'm happy to do it. Hey, first, congratulations on being a world champion.
Yeah, thank you.
Not many people can say that.
Thank you. You know how it is. You know, I used to be like really, oh, now you can't call yourself world champion. It's an NBA championship. It's not a world championship. That only exists with national teams. Now, when you win the NBA championship, it's like, I'm a world champion now.
Yeah, you really can't say it.
But forget about all that. A world champion, that's what it is.
Yeah, no doubt.
So before we dive into it, so just to make sure, you know, that people understand, you had a long coaching career, and we're going to talk about the path throughout the coaching career, what inspired you to be a coach, your journey as an assistant coach, your transition to a head coach, and then the things that come also with the downfall of a head coach, you know, the challenges that come with mental challenges. And then we're going to transition into you transitioning into a completely new field and what the challenges are with that, and how people can, especially young coaches and young assistant coaches, maybe can have that side of the coin as well, presented to them. So let's define your career in the beginning of how you started to be an assistant coach. What inspired you to be a coach? And you had a early on a career at University of Tennessee and SMU, and I was wondering what inspired you to be a head assistant coach in the beginning, and then inspired you to go overseas to coach, because that's a whole different avenue.
Yeah, I grew up playing all the sports, but basketball is the one I really fell in love with. So in high school, my dream was to play in the NBA, and course, I thought I was going to make it until I got cut my junior year in high school. That was a crushing blow. But actually, it was a great experience in that I bounced back from it and made the team the following year with a lot of hard work and dedication. So
that's the Jordan mentality. All right. I like it.
Yeah, right.
You're on a Jordan trajectory there.
Yeah, I was almost this close. So just like Jordan, just a little bit
just less. Right there.
Yeah. So I love basketball. I played it. I didn't play too much in high school, but I was on the team and I was a workhorse in practice. But I read a book called Season on the Brink by Bobby, or written about Bobby Knight and the Indiana Hoosiers. And it really inspired me. And I thought I wanted to be a coach like Bobby Knight, basically a authoritarian tyrant that got the most out of people, supposedly. So, he was an unbelievable, obviously, Hall of Fame coach. But I thought I was going to be a coach like that, and I wanted to be a coach like that until I went to college and I started working with University of Tennessee men's basketball team as a student manager. And we had a coach there, Kevin O'Neill, who was a great coach and was similar in style to Bobby Knight. And I realized at that time that that did not fit my personality. It's not the type of coach that I wanted to be or could be. And there's a lot of ways to coach, but that didn't fit me personally. So I just knew after reading that book that I wanted to be a part of basketball and be a part of teams and try to build cultures and win championships. And that's what drove me to becoming a coach. So, yeah, I worked with a team there at Tennessee, and that got my foot in the door.
And how did you think of going to Europe? I mean, that was also at that time, or not the most common path to go from college and coach in Europe, where most coaches probably seek a head coaching career in college.
Yeah, I mean, my dream was to become a head coach in college basketball. But I worked at Tennessee for, I think, 3 years, student manager, graduate assistant. And then I got an assistant coaching job at SMU in Dallas. And I was there 4 years. And, it was a combination of I was not satisfied with the life, the team that I had, not the players, but just the culture that was being built. And I think it's very, very hard to build a good culture in such a high pressure environment like college basketball. And, so I was frustrated at the job, and I felt like it was going to be really tough for me to get a higher level job in college with the situation I was in, because in order to get a job in college, you need your head coach to be well connected and to be proactive. And, I wasn't sure that was going to happen. And I was working really long hours, like so many college basketball coaches do, and mostly in the office, and only 15% basketball, and the rest was recruiting, checking on study halls and all kinds of organizational stuff. And I wanted to be a basketball coach. At that same time was in the NBA, I think it was 2001 or 2000, where there was like 20 something international players drafted in the draft, something like that. And it was really high, and it kept going up each year. And, Dirk Nowitzki, I was there in Dallas. Dirk Nowitzki had been drafted by the Mavs. And, I said, hey, I want to go coach in Europe. Look at all these great players being drafted. I'd like to be in a pro environment where, I don't have to recruit and all these other things, and to see the world. And I just was really lucky and got a chance to get a job in Germany and as an assistant coach for a pro team in Frankfurt. And I took it.
Yeah, for Gordy, who's a world champion right now.
Yes.
He's another world champion in that other sector.
Yes. And we won a championship with Gordy there in Frankfurt. And I mean, he's an unbelievable coach. And actually, the growth of Gordy since that time is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. At that time, he was a fantastic defensive coach, and he really knew how to manage players well and construct a team that was cohesive, both basketball-wise and personality-wise. I learned so much from him in the year and a half that I spent with him. But now, years later, his offensive systems were you know, really, really, really good. And that wasn't, you know, he didn't have those when I was working for him. He developed as a coach.
And you had some young players there. One of them, Freddie, who's our common friend and who's always also been on this podcast. And you had also do some mentorship, as I recall, with the young guys, but also coaching, just being an assistant coach in a professional environment. Like you said, what lessons did you feel like you had to learn quickly? What was the uphill battle for you coming from America to Europe in an environment like that to learn on the fly that you didn't learn in college and had to pick up on quickly in Europe?
Wow. I mean, that's enough for two podcasts, but, yeah, I mean, I was quite naive. You know, I was at SMU. We were a mid-major team and we had some talented guys. We had two guys that got drafted in the NBA that were on our team at SMU. So we had some talent. And I thought going over to Germany that, you know, our college team would be able to compete with the first league professional team in Germany. But I was sorely mistaken. That team had, you know, 30-year-old guys that had played for the German national team and won the European championship. I mean, there was some really, really intelligent and experienced basketball players as well as highly skilled. So, you know, back then, that's 2002, you know, when we at SMU, when we were working on ball screens, I mean, we didn't teach hardly anything about, you know, holding the screen, timing of setting the screen and coming off the screen. And that was about it. We were not, you know, the first week in Germany at practice, I was like, my mind was blown with the detail and all the different things that we were looking at with pick and rolls, different ways to use it and rejecting it and, you know, slipping it. And I mean, just, it was a real education, basketball education, and just the team play, that was way farther ahead than in college.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, terminology was much more detailed. It was just a pro team with a very good coach and really good players.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I thought I was going over to Europe for a few years to learn and build networks and bring over some Euro players and come back to college. But, you know, in that first week, I realized that I don't want to go back. This is a great lifestyle, you know, pro players, you know, all you're doing is basketball and, you know, two practices a day, strategizing about opponents, you know, It was like a dream come true.
Yeah, that reminds me. It rings a bell for me when I made that jump to Cheska, and that was also a like revelation in my head where like you think you know, and then you realize that there's a lot of things you don't know, and you have to be humble enough to understand that you have to be quiet and observe and learn and ask and kind of make mistakes, but also just kind of get those wrinkles out of your system and comprehend, because the speed of execution, the speed of the game was completely different in terms of how much information was being processed at a high level and, you know, the bandwidth of the players, how much information, how quickly it was absorbed and implemented, and the mistakes were like eradicated immediately. And those are the things when you jump to one from like several levels up, it's yeah, you just don't know what you're going to find out. Like you don't know what you don't know, right? But you, yeah, once you know, like you realize that this is really, there's layers to that, and this is one of the highest levels that you can really coach on. So yeah, I can imagine the growth process there was difficult. And then you became a head coach at Gießen, right? Was that right after Frankfurt?
No, so I was at Frankfurt for 4 years, and then while I was at Frankfurt, I got offered international scouting position,
right,
with the Denver Nuggets.
And, I wasn't sure which one came first. So let's talk about the position, why you went to the NBA, and then why you came back actually to coach,
yeah,
because that's also very, very, very eye-opening.
Yeah, so I wasn't looking to get in the NBA. It wasn't really on my radar. You know, Europe was, you know, like I said, when I got there, it was now my kind of dream come true. When I was approached about it, initially I said no. It was Masai Ujiri. He was at that time the director of scouting for the Nuggets, and I had known Masai. And he asked me, hey, you want to come scout for us? You can live there in Frankfurt and scout Europe. And initially I told him no. You know, I was like, hey, I'm a coach. I'm not a scout. I love coaching. And then I, you know, thought about it, talked to some friends, and they said, hey, you know, isn't it worth checking out? And, you know, after some reflection, I thought, you know what, this is a chance to see if it is something that I would want to pursue. So I took it. It was a great, great experience. I learned a ton about evaluating players and just a totally different way to look at the game than a coach does. So I did that for 2 seasons. And, you know, I remember the first time that I went to the Nuggets training camp. And I walked in the gym. I won't say who the player was, but it was a player that we all know and could have been a real superstar. Never lived up to his potential, but it was Tim Gergerich. So anyone who's, you know, has followed the NBA in the past, Tim Gergerich was basically an icon. He was like a legend as far as an individual training and an assistant coach in the NBA. And he'd worked for, I don't know, 30 years or more in the NBA. And here he was, this guy, Tim Gergerich, who I'd heard so much about, and he was rebounding for a player. It was just him and the player. And the player was out of 3-point line, and Tim Gergerich is passing the balls out to him, and players, you know, catching, shooting, and Tim Gergerich was saying, straight up and down, straight up and down. So he wanted him to shoot on balance, straight up and down. And the player was taking a fadeaway to the left, taking a fadeaway to the right, taking a fadeaway straight back. And each time Tim Gergerich was saying, straight up and down, straight up and down. And there's the player completely disrespecting him, disregarding him right to his face. I could see it if there was 5 players and, you know, he's saying something and a player doesn't do it once or twice, you know. This was one-on-one, saying it over and over again, completely disrespecting. My mind was like, oh, my goodness. How do you coach these guys? You know, Now that's an isolated, not every player's like that, obviously, but it just left an impression on me. And, George Karl was the coach. And, you know, we had players, Allen Iverson, Carmelo Anthony, Kenyon Martin, J.R. Smith, a wide variety of players.
Was Klaza there too?
Yes, he was. Yeah. And he was extremely hard worker. He would shoot threes every time after practice with a rebounder, a passer, and a guy that would just be in his face, right? This far from him, right in his face, and he'd be shooting threes over him. Yeah. It was impressive. But my point was, with that cast of characters, very talented guys, but also I would say some guys that might be somewhat difficult to coach with. And I thought he did a masterful job of getting those guys to be a unit and to be coachable. But at the same time, I thought, you know, here's a guy who's been doing it, you know, 30 years, and it was a real challenge for him. And how was I, as the guy that's never played higher than high school with no name, going to be able to make it? And maybe I could follow that route of working my way from international scout to video guy to assistant coach to advanced scout assistant, you know, the whole thing, and be on the bench and be there for 15, 20 years and hope I get a head coaching job. And maybe I never do. And I really thought, you know what? I'd rather be in Europe and be a head coach and build a culture like I want to, where the players don't necessarily run the prison. You know, if players are making $40 million a year and your head coach is making $10 million a year, who's more expendable when there's problems?
It's tough. Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, really tough.
And there's only so many jobs out there in that position. So it's a very niche specialty of that, you know, that we were all kind of navigating the waters of it. And you more so than I, because I've been in this job now dabbling between two of them at 2 separate time periods. So I had the best of both worlds in a sense, but I never was a head coach. So that's why I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
So you did, and then after that, you did take the Giessen job before you went to Shanghai. So let's talk about the Giessen experience. Was a very special, like a sliding, not a sliding door moment, but a revolutionary kind of experience. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yep. Yeah, that definitely was a pivotal moment for me. So I was with the Nuggets, and at that time also I wasn't looking to move. But Giessen 46ers, who were in the first league in Germany, Bundesliga, which is a very good league. That's the league I was in before with Frankfurt. High level basketball. So I had never been a head coach. I think I was 35. And they actually pursued me, and I've been recommended to them by several people. And they came, and actually the sport director from the team, that was his last mission. So he said, hey, I'm quitting the job as a sport director for you. And they said, all right, the last job we want you to do is to hire our coach. So this sport director really liked me, really believed in me. And he hired me, and then he left. So that was a issue right there. Mm-hmm. So there was just a lot of issues, but that was the first one. Mm-hmm. Many people had warned me about that job because management had kind of a reputation as being very difficult, and a lot of people and didn't really know who was the decision maker, and maybe not always wise decisions, both on the financial side and the basketball side. And it was a really, really difficult job. It had numerous things. So it had the management. It had now brought in new management, a new sport director who was 30 years old with no experience. We brought back 9 players from a team that was the worst team in the league that didn't move down. So I didn't have a lot that I could add. I did bring a few players. But we almost went bankrupt, injury problems. So it was like numerous things on top of each other. Here I am, rookie head coach, 35 years old, hadn't been in the league in 2 years, because I was scouting. I wasn't on top of the league like I was before. And, it was really tough. It was miserable. I didn't sleep for, I think, 3 months. Because there was problems that were, I couldn't resolve, that I was trying to figure out how to resolve. And every night I'm like, hey, how can I figure this out tomorrow? And blah, blah, blah. I mean, we didn't have 10 guys in practice for like 2 months.
Just basically putting out fires every day.
Putting out fires every day, not even being able to play 5-on-5. So, I expressed this to management, but, it didn't happen. Then my sport director got fired, because we left late for a game. The sport director was in charge of all the travel stuff and when we leave and these things. And we left, in reasonable time that there was no traffic, but we were in a traffic jam on the highway, sitting there for 2 hours, not moving. And, I called the coach, who I knew was an American guy, and said, hey, can we postpone the game for 30 minutes? We'll come off the bus, come on the court, and we'll play. He said, I just talked with my owner, and he said, nope, we need the points. So we need the points for the win. So you got to forfeit. So we forfeited that game, and my sport director got fired.
Wow.
New sport director came on, who was a former player and coach, had never coached in the first league, wanted to coach in the first league. So the first day he got hired, he brought me in and said, hey, We need a fantastic job in a terrible situation. So basically telling me that I was going to be fired. It was just a matter of time. So that was pretty devastating for me because, I'd worked 17 years for this one head coaching job, finally get it. And, I'm fired in half a year. My identity that I had for myself was basketball coach. That's what I did for, so many years, basically full time, dedicating my life to it like so many coaches do. And that was my identity. So when you get fired, it's basically you failed. You're a failure. and I was crushed. And, you know, I had to really take a look at, you know, look in the mirror and say, hey, who are you? Are you just a basketball coach, or are you more than that? And do I want to just judge myself as a basketball coach? Because as a basketball coach, we're judged by fans, owners, media, and we don't have any control over that. We can do the best job that we can and still fail and be fired and our identities crushed. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I really, like I said, it was a pivotal moment. And I realized, okay, I have to define myself outside of being a coach, and coach is just a part of who I am, not the whole, not my whole being. And, that really led to a lot of self growth and lessons learned. And, you know, one of the lessons learned at Giessen was, you know, I knew as a coach, you have to manage the people below you, the players, the staff, the fans, but what I realized at Giessen is you also have to spend a lot of time managing the people above you, the management, the owners, the sponsors. You have to do the best you can at controlling, guiding how they're viewing the situation, because they don't have the reality. You have the reality as a coach. What's going on? What's really going on? What you need to win? What it takes? You know, they have their idea, and every owner I've worked for thinks they know how you should coach basketball, how to build a team, how to build a club. And a lot of times the owners in Europe, especially at lower levels, do not have that experience. They are great because they own a law firm or they own a medical company, but they don't know how to run a basketball team.
Different avenue.
But yeah, and that's a really big challenge.
How much, after getting fired, how much self-doubt was there before self-growth and learning experience came into it? Like, you naturally start to reflect, and then we all beat ourselves up, right? We're the biggest enemy of ourselves in our heads. How long was that period for you, and how difficult was it to outgrow your self-doubt?
Yeah, I don't know how long the period was, but it was, you know, it was months. and I'm someone that is, that does reflect and is self-critical. And I think that's vital to growth. You know, you don't learn from experiences. You learn from the reflecting and the analyzation of those experiences. So if you're doing something, but you're not going back and really diving deep, you're not going to get that much out of it. And I really did dive deep on that. And, there's a lot of things I could have done better. But I think the main, reason for my failure as a leader at that time wasn't a lack of basketball knowledge, or, it was more that this pressure that was coming on me, wore me down. Energetic with my energy and with my mental energy. So I was looking tired, and I was tired. I felt tired. You could see it on my face. And as a leader, you have to exude confidence. You have to exude that you're sure of what you're doing, that the path that you're on is the right way, that you believe in your guys, that you believe you're going to win. And that was my biggest enemy. I was not exuding confidence. I was exuding fatigue, fear. Mm-hmm.
Nervousness.
And so with all the problems that we were having, you know, maybe the older, more experienced version of myself, well, I know I would have dealt with it much better. Whether I would have overcome that or not, I don't know, but, that was my biggest enemy, was just the self-doubt, the fatigue, mental fatigue, not being exuding confidence and surety as a leader. And also getting rid of some of the guys that were cancerous on the team earlier. I was afraid to cut them because we didn't have enough. We didn't have 10 in practice as it was. Mm-hmm. I cut these two guys, you know, we might have six. And that was, you know, and maybe I should have done it, but I would have really had been brave to do that. And at that time, I wasn't strong enough.
Yeah, for a rookie coach, that braveness is definitely, like, you don't have the experience yet or the knowledge to know the repercussions of it or how much it can open up, you know, by like addition by subtraction. But right. that comes with experience, and that's also something that's very, very, you know, nip or tuck. Like, it's a fine line there.
Yeah. And you never know until after something like that is done whether it was the right decision or not.
Yeah. So what was the biggest takeaway when after that you were at peace with that situation at some point? Did it take you a long time to kind of like put it away? And you, when was the point where you stopped thinking about it? It was just kind of, you took the lessons from it and then you just moved on from it to
I think
go to
when
Shanghai.
I got my next job. Yeah.
Shanghai. Yeah.
Shanghai Sharks. So I basically, after I got fired from Giessen, I had a year sabbatical where I lived in Spain. It was fantastic. And met a young Darko Rajkovic, who was coaching a Division IV team in Spain.
Torredonas. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I lived in Spain for a year, and then I got the job in China. And, you know, these were bold decisions. I mean, making the decision to leave SMU, which was a good job, a mid-major in NCAA, is a good job. All my friends are saying, are you crazy? You're leaving a, you know, D1 school to go to Germany. But when I did it, I thought, hey, this was the best decision I ever made. And then the offer for China, and you know, that was another one where I was like, what? You're going there? And it was a pretty bold decision. But again, it was a great, great experience. I don't regret it for a minute. I was there 3 years. I was an assistant, and I was a much better assistant after being a head coach. I still made mistakes as an assistant coach, but I was much, much better with the perspective of a head coach. Mm-hmm. And one quote that Kevin O'Neill, the coach that I worked for at Tennessee, told me that I remembered when I got the head coaching job, is he said, the 6 inches between the assistant coach's chair and the head coach's chair is the biggest 6 inches in the world. And it was a great, great quote. It's so true. So going back to being assistant was much more enjoyable. and it was a great, great learning experience being in China, not just with the basketball, but with the whole cultural experience.
What were the main things that you could apply right away after being a head coach to help the head coach and being a better assistant coach? What was that, like, the one glaring thing that you felt like you could help him right away with?
I think just realizing that my job as an assistant coach is to do whatever the head coach needs for him to be successful. That's the role of an assistant coach. Do whatever the head coach needs for him to be successful. So that meant trying to take away as many little problems as possible so he doesn't have to deal with them or think about them. Mm-hmm. Whether it be little problems between teammates or travel issues or making sure everything on the scout report is the way he wants it and the video is the way he wants it. And so I would say just having that perspective of trying to make his life as easy as possible for the head coach so he can deal with the big problems that only he can deal with.
So after that experience in Shanghai, you at some point you wanted to be a head coach, obviously, again. You became a head coach in Hanau. So what was the biggest change of identity from the first head coaching job to the second head coaching job? Because you said you had a big identity, your identity crushed after you got fired, because everything went into it to be a head coach and to define yourself as a head coach. This is how players also, they die two deaths, you know, that people say that they die a regular death, but also die the career. And afterwards, if they all they knew was a basketball career, basketball player, they go into regular life and just don't know how to deal with it anymore because the attention is not there anymore. They don't have the success, the crowds. They don't have the emotional gratification. What was the biggest change for you, and how did you prepare yourself for the new head coaching position that you got later on and felt like you were a different person? In what ways?
Yeah. I mean, after China, I was in China for 3 years and I took another sabbatical because I had made some good money in China and I had my fill of China and I knew that I wanted to get back to Europe. But I took a year sabbatical and lived in Boston and went and visited NBA teams and college teams and did like a route through Europe. And
I visited also, you there too. I remember that.
Yeah.
You were living close to Harvard Square.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. That was a fantastic time. Also just for personal self growth, but also, where I put down all of my philosophy and concepts and on how to build a team, how to build a culture, how to build players, strategical stuff. And I put it all, down, you know, on paper, basically, and made like a manual, a handbook for myself. So I had the philosophical one and then the actual, like workbook of drills and plays and all these things. So I did that. And so I came into the job much, much more confident of what I wanted our culture to be, what kind of players that I was going to get. And because, you know, also with a scouting background, very, very defined on what were critical things for us as our culture, who we wanted on our team, and trying to fit players together with a small budget, because we had a small budget at that team that I went to in Hanau, Germany. So I came in with a lot more confidence. I came in with a lot clearer picture of what we were going to do, who our identity was going to be. And also with the idea that I had to spend a significant amount of time with the management to guide their expectations.
Yeah, so, that's like you said, managing up and managing down is important. Managing the expectations and constant communication, probably. How did you at some point, I remember that you guys made the playoffs, then you guys got relegated the following year, right? Then you played
a couple years later.
Couple years later.
Yeah.
So at some point, there's always pressure involved. Like the relegation there's pressure for a head coach, definitely for every game, basically, right?
Yeah.
But how did you deal with the daily pressure of a head coach and being relegated, then going to the third division, and then having to rebuild yourself, not lose your confidence. I mean, there's constant mental challenges in the mind of a head coach. Like you can't get rattled by that, and you have to be able to stay on course in what you believe in, and not get sidetracked by people outside of the picture. Like you said, like a lot of people up or down, they feel like they know everything better, and never coached before. So how do you manage that pressure from people that may not understand what they're talking about, but also the internal pressure that you apply to yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I just had a much stronger self, a sense of self at that time, and I knew that the process that I was implementing was the right process. I mean, you know, I think we did things the right way, and I was there in Hanau for 4.5 years. And after the first year, they gave me a 4-year contract, which is unheard of at that level, second league in Germany. And, you know, we built my year 2 and 3, we built really good teams, in my opinion. We made the playoffs in my third year. In year 2, we had injuries and some players had to leave for personal reasons, which prevented us. But year 3, we built a really good team on a low budget that made the playoffs. That was our pinnacle. The problem was the management wasn't, they had big, big dreams, but didn't always were able to follow through with the things required to achieve those dreams, i.e. funds. and actually the year we made the playoffs, before we had made the playoffs, management had told me they didn't want us to make the playoffs that year because it would cost us more for those extra 3 games of playoffs, right? And they wanted to save that for the following year. And I could not go along with that. That's a crazy idea. It's not fair to our players or our fans. We've worked so hard if we have a chance to make the playoffs, we need to go for the playoffs, and then we'll solve whatever issues after that. And hopefully you have momentum now that you made the playoffs. We made the playoffs, and one of the owners came to me right after the win, and he said, "That's really, really good for you, Simon. It was good for you. Good for me. It was good for our, our team."
Wow.
So,
so he made it look like people were selfish by
yes, exactly. Exactly. I was doing it all for me. So, you know, these are the issues that you were, I mean, guys that are watching this podcast from Europe probably have similar experiences, but, I've had a lot of these that were just, real challenges. But so to go back to your point, how did I manage that stress and whatnot? Well, I had a much stronger sense of self in that, hey, what I have to value, what I have to measure myself on is the process. Am I doing the right, am I executing the right process? And am I sticking to that? And also important to me is treating people right, you know, trying to be the best leader I can and lead men and help them grow, be the best person they can be the best players they can be, try to build the best culture that we can, and develop guys as basketball players and bring in the right people. And if I'm doing those things to the best of my ability day after day, and, you know, we're scouting teams, we're, you know, preparing game plans and trying to do the best job with in-game coaching, the best I can do is the best I can do. And, hey, and I just said, hey, if they're going to fire me, they're going to fire me. I'm doing everything I can. That's out of my control. If they're mad at me for making the playoffs this year, that's not my problem. That's their problem, right? And so, yeah, and we had some good runs. I think we built a great culture. I had numerous players on throughout the seasons that said, this is the best team I've been on. And I took a lot of pride in that. And I took a lot of pride in the relationships, good, positive relationships that I had with players from the past. And example is Freddie, our mutual friend who I coached, lived with him for 2.5 years. And he is just an outstanding human being and a success in every sense of the word. And I'm very proud of the little, whatever impact I had on him, as a young man and as my player. I take a lot of, it's very rewarding for me.
Yeah, yeah, no, I can imagine, because mentorship is a big part of coaching. And then when you see that the mentorship pays off, actually, it's much more, it's, you know, makes, gives you purpose. It gives you some sort of sense of accomplishment off the court, not only on the court, you know, that everybody sees the wins on the court, but nobody sees the wins off the court that you accomplish through relationships, through mentorship, through helping them achieve their personal goals. And Freddie went off to become a superstar in his role off the court in a different avenue outside of basketball, yeah, and in basketball with the women's team that he also is, exactly, coaching under Laura. So he's been successful in his own right, and not where everybody expected him to early on, because he was a very high level talent that didn't pan out, but ended up panning out in different areas of the world. So the world doesn't end, you know, in that one avenue. And this is what we're going to go to also with your next job as well. But before we go into the Cologne job, what was the most gratifying moment up until that point? Like, did you, in terms of mentorship, gratification that you got out of coaching, being a head coach and being with Hanau, was there something that stands out the most for you where you feel like this warms my heart?
Yeah. So, after I got fired from Hanau. This was 2.5 years after we made the playoffs. And, it was also, again, where a new, GM, sport director, CEO came in, and, he wanted to go in a different direction. And so it was kind of surprising. It was certainly surprising for all the players, and at Hanau. And, you know, after I'd gotten fired, I don't know, 3 or 4 days later, I had the players threw me a party at one of the players' house. And they made a video. It was like, I don't know, it might be only 3-minute video, but it was of, I would say, 25 players, former players, players from that team and players from prior teams. And each one just giving a little video message.
That's cool.
Of a thanks and what impact I had on them. I mean, that was, I have it this day on my computer. It's the most, powerful thing for me. You know, that all those players felt like I impacted their lives and thanked them for it. That was amazing.
These personal messages touch people, you know, and then it gives you a sense of that you did, like you said, you believed in the process, you did the right thing. And sometimes the process is the right process, but it just doesn't pan out. And it's not necessarily your fault. It's just sometimes how the stars align and how other factors come into play. In sports, professional sports, there's so many dynamics that are just out of our control that sometimes we just have to roll with the punches, but along the way, not forget to smell the flowers. Like you get those moments, right. And you gotta cherish those because they don't come very often.
Right. I agree 100%. Now that being said, you know, you said that there's a lot of factors outside of your control. And I took jobs that were challenging for sure. Teams that were kind of at the bottom, And my dream was to build them up. And the thing is, if you join a team that's already very successful, you may not be able to change your culture like you want to because things are set, things are going good. Whereas the teams that I chose, I at least had the opportunity to change your culture, right? Mm-hmm. And build it up. Now, that being said, a lot of things out of my control. There's a lot of things that I could have done better as a head coach that maybe would have changed our direction. Maybe, you know, I think it's a combination. It's one, when you get fired, it's not one thing. It's usually a multitude of things. And it's a combination of things that were out of your control and things that were in your control that maybe if you had done it differently, you could have salvaged it even with the things that were out of your control. Mm-hmm. Right. So, I think I was a good coach. But I think, you know, my biggest skill set was developing people and managing people and building people up and building a good culture. And with the X's and O's and some of the things that I could have done to make our team better, but might have been more cutthroat, I didn't do those. And maybe if I had, maybe I would have been more successful, but you never know. But you know, that's where I think, you know, you just, for me, myself, I have to judge it on my actions and trying to be the best version of myself, doing what I do really well and trying to do it as much as I can and trying to find people that make up for my weaknesses and have me and surround myself with those types of people.
Yeah, that's the thing that you feel like. I always had the feeling you have a really great perception on life. And that's one thing that you can always share with other players. You know, like, players don't want to always talk about basketball because it's not always about the X's and O's. It's not always about the basketball. Sometimes it's about other things to gain, help them to widen their horizon and understand other things in life in order to apply it maybe on the court, because there's a lot of parallels all the time that I find also just by going through life and then sometimes reading a book. And then I was like, okay, I can totally apply that in the coaching job that I work in the summertime, and this applies mm-hmm. to this situation or that situation. And then when you talk to players, it's also a way to use that information that you have experienced in your life and seen or read about, and then help them to switch their perception, you know, on basketball, because it's not always about the X's and O's. It's not always about just the execution. It's sometimes just the way the player talks to himself. You know, for example, I've listened to a podcast of about psychology, and it was not necessarily about sports psychology. It was more about the general psychology of a human being and how we tend to berate ourselves for not being perfect. You know, like that we're just like, you suck. You're just a bad worker. You should not go. You should, you know, quit and retire and go in a different direction, and just kind of cursing yourself out mentally. And then they said, would you actually talk to your best friend the way you talk to yourself? Would you actually tell your best friend the same thing that you're telling yourself now? Or would you encourage him? would you actually tell him, hey, look, man, like take it a little bit lighter, you know, it's not a big deal. Do it better next time, you know. It's fine. Your form was fine. You just missed a shot. You're going to make the next free throw. And then, you know, you talk to a player, you tell the player, like, is this how you want to talk to yourself? Or is you want to talk to yourself the way you talk to your best friend? And when I heard that, I just, that's how I applied it to the sports world, to the basketball coaching, because, ooh, you know, they were talking about a different avenue, but this is applicable to sports 100%, because you wouldn't talk to your teammate. You would, in the way you talk to yourself, you know, like that, or vice versa. You wouldn't talk to yourself the way you talk to your teammate the way you talk to yourself. So that's one thing that I think that I drew from it, and I find those lessons constantly. And I think it's important to have a wider horizon, to educate yourself off the court in order to apply it to the work that you're doing. I think it's called T specialist or something like that. Having a wide array of talents or information that you can apply in your field. You know, I think it's a T form, T okay. specialist or something like that, I think. Okay. So before we go into the next avenue of how to not only redefine your head coaching perception and head coaching identity and apply it to your next head coaching job, but also how you redefine your own job or yourself and went in a completely different avenue and how you got to that point of making the decision, I want to share my screen for you, and we're going to talk about Cologne a little bit, and you're going to tell me without you know, like, I don't want to keep beating up on you. I feel like I'm beating up on you and talking to you about
it things. It is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. I mean, that's why I like talking to you, because it's a very...
One thing about getting fired so much is you get thick skin.
Yeah, like okay, next.
Yeah. Not too many people can get to me.
I think it was called Rheinstars, right? Rheinstars Cologne. Yeah. Cologne. All right. So
okay. So we're gonna look at a bad box score. Okay.
We're gonna look at the box score here on ProBallers.com, which is a sponsor, and we're gonna show how far back they go and Rheinstars
okay,
Cologne.
Okay, but I wasn't with the team in April and May.
No, I know, but we have the schedule right here.
Oh, okay.
We go right to February, and I think this is the game right here.
February
against the Sixers.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Was that the last game?
Yeah, that was the last game. That's right.
All right. So this is the box score of your last game. Against the Sixers before you got let go for the third time. And what do you remember from this box? What do you remember from that game at all? Like, what's the first memory that comes to your mind when you see that box score, and what kind of memories come up?
Well, number one, we couldn't stop Vincent Federico. but I mean, he crushed us. The thing that sticks out to my mind is that the CEO and the sport director of the team was on the bench. And so this was already signaling to our team that they had lost faith in it. So at that point, there's no point of return.
You felt it coming already? You felt it coming
oh,
already?
Oh, yeah. If it wasn't this game, it was going to be the next one, you know. And, you know, I mean, this was a team that before the season, I mean, I knew this. The sport director told me, hey, we got a super small budget this year. Our goal is to stay in the league. You know, we just have to stay in the league. And then next year we'll bump the budget up and make moves, which would have been fine. But with the team that we had, I thought, even though I hadn't been in that league now for a while, but the first day of preseason, our second best player, we had an American, Vincent Golson, who was a stud, who was a shooting guard. He's not a point guard. But he's, you know, 5'8".
And 5'8". at one point.
Yeah, I mean, he's tiny and he's strong. He was a good player, but he's not a point guard. He didn't know how to. The kid's a great kid, but he's not a. We had a German guy
Finland first division. He's playing now.
Yeah, and at that time, he'd never played. You know, he was a few years out of college when he came. But anyways, the first day of preseason, our German point guard, who was a really good player and floor general, great pick and roll player, very good 3-point shooter, got an injury that he was out for the season. And he was very cheap for us because he worked in the office in marketing, right? So he was really cheap for the team. So then when he got hurt, we couldn't replace him with 700 euros. Nobody. You can't get even not a very good German player for 700 euros, never mind a top player in the league. Yeah. So that was tough. But anyways, what I remember from that game is the sport director sitting on the bench. Basically, all the players knew it was coming. It was a matter of time. I thought our guys fought pretty hard, but we didn't have anybody. We didn't have a defensive stopper. Mm-hmm. We're not a good defensive team 1-on-1, and we could not stop Federici. Vincent Federici.
Hey, shout out to Kozlauskas. There's Lithuania. Lukas Kozlauskas that had actually 10-point game and playing in Lithuania second division right now. So shout out to Lukas Kozlauskas, who just is the Lithuanian on the come up. I guess not. He's 32 years old now. All right. That's just a short introduction of my sponsor, ProBoss.com. And so after that job, what was the thought process and the decision making process of changing avenues and completely redefining yourself and going into a different direction? How long did you wrestle with yourself of giving up your dream of continuing to coach at a high level and continue to be a professional head coach and not going into the finance sector? What was the process for that in your mind?
Well, when I took the Cologne job, I knew it was a risk. I knew it was a high risk because like he had told me, hey, we don't have much money. We just want to stay in the league. And I know, because I've been in both head coaching jobs I had before that was the same. When you have a low budget team, you're much more susceptible to injury because, you don't have a deep roster, right? Yeah. So you're dependent on a few guys that hopefully are steals that are cheap, but really good players. So you're heavily dependent on them. So, for example, when Viktor Frankomaus, that was the name of the point guard, great, great player and a great guy. I like him a lot. And with Cologne, for example, we needed Vincent and Viktor to be healthy through the whole season. If we didn't, you're already climbing an uphill battle. And so I knew before taking the job, it was a high risk. So I said, hey, if I do a good job and we get a little lucky, this could be a good spot because they were in the first league years ago. Everybody's heard of this club. We have fantastic facilities, and potentially big sponsors behind it. So there was a lot of good reasons to take the job, but you're only an injury away from being in a tough spot. So I said, all right, I'm going to take the job. And if I get fired, time to change course.
So you already, before you got the job, before you took the job, you already decided that. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was like my last go. And I loved coaching. I worked at 25 years. It was my passion for all that time, dedicated my life to it, just like so many coaches do. But also there's a lot of other sides to me. Like I said, that just not my identity is not only basketball coach. I love museums. I love concerts. I want to spend real quality time with my extended family and my brothers and sisters and my nephews and nieces and my mom and dad who are getting older. And I've always, for 18, 19 years, I lived overseas, which meant I saw my family basically one time a year in the off season. So, you know, that's a huge sacrifice to make.
Sacrifice is real, man.
Real. And I said, you know, and the other thing is, what were my realistic options? Having been fired three times and, you know, I'd been at the first league, I'd worked in the NBA, I'd worked in China, worked in EuroLeague, but then I also worked in Pro A, second league Germany, third league Germany. And what was my realistic avenues that I could, where I could get a job? Yeah, I know a ton of people in the NBA, but I'm not in a daily contact with them, and they're not going to hire a guy they haven't talked to in a year. You know, they've got other people on their list who are working for them that deserve it more. And, you know, that means, okay, am I going to get an assistant job in the first league in Germany and hope that guy has success and I can ride his coattails a little bit till I can get a good job off of a winning team that he's leading, right? And also financially, do I want to make that sacrifice of, you know, making the money an assistant coach does in first league Germany, for example, for 3 years? And then hopefully I get a head job with that. I have a chance to win. And so basically I said, you know, I stuck with my idea that if I didn't turn around at Cologne, then I was going to go a different direction. I didn't necessarily know exactly what that was, but I was going to do something different.
But did other factors come into play? Would, like, I mean, you, how old were you when you left? That was 3 years ago?
I'd say 49.
49. Did age matter? Was that something that you felt like?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been grinding for a while. And now I've had to grind the last year. But my plan is that I'm not going to grind like I did as a coach for the next 10 years, 15 years.
Yeah.
And it's not the same. Like, you know, I'm an employee now. I'm not the owner. So I don't have sleepless nights. You know, I'm working a lot now, but I expect that in a year or so, when I have my processes and systems in place and my network in place and really have an expertise for the field I'm in, that I won't have to be grinding like I did as a head coach.
Tell the people what you're doing now, and then we're going to talk about telling people first of all of what you're doing right now and what you started to you got your license now in what field.
Yeah. So now I am a financial advisor working for a wealth management firm. But my specialty and my focus is on retirement plans for businesses. So it's a, you know, totally different than anything I've done. And I didn't have any background in finance. You know, I studied psychology in college, degree in psychology and sport management. So no background whatsoever in finance. So, a friend of mine is basically the CEO of the wealth management firm that I now work for. And he is a former basketball coach, and, he thought I'd be good at the job. And he said, hey, join me. We'll teach you everything you need to know. I think you'd be really good at this job. And, so I did it, and I came back home. I'm living near to my family, relatively. Which was very important to me, and the potential to, have a good income in a few years, a really good income in a few years, and to have a steady job that I wasn't worried about if I was going to get fired next week, if we lost to the BSW Sixers. So I came here. I live in New Hampshire, and, I had to start from ground zero, and it was a real challenge. I had to take basically three certification exams in a row. And, you know, each book to prepare was 500 pages with terminology that I had to look up from the most basic finance term. I was looking every word up and, working half days and studying the rest of the day. Sometimes going to a hotel for a weekend just to isolate myself and study all weekend. And very intensive tests. I passed them all, and yeah, now I'm actually working and doing things that I'll be doing for the next few years.
Yeah, it's I can't imagine to, you know, completely redefining yourself, starting over in a completely new field with new lingo and not knowing really what's ahead of you. How did the coaching experiences prepare for you in this process of relearning and rewiring your brain, basically?
I just have the belief that that I can take on challenges and find a way to be successful, you know. I mean, from moving to different countries, living in different cultures, trying to learn other languages like German, being in all these high pressure situations with your back against, you know, back against the wall, and building teams up and having the, just the general challenges of getting people to work together and try to get the most out of people, trying to win games, you know, and all these experiences, just, I have the confidence in myself that I'll figure it out and I'll find a way.
Yeah, it's people, you have to be a people's person in coaching as well as in other avenues as well. I think that helps. I think the discipline of and close to, you know, the perfectionist mind kind of helps you also to be as tidy and as committed to in other crafts as well. You know, when you know that your back's against the wall, basically, and you have to really apply yourself into this avenue and going to get into games, preparing yourself for wins and losses and having the pressure of maybe losing the game and maybe getting fired. I think that dealing with that pressure over the course of the years also helps to really being able to absorb and be resilient to those situations and not let that, you know, penetrate your brain while you're trying to relearn everything.
Right. 100%. I mean, and, you know, all the basketball situations, but all the life situations, living in China, you know, being in situations you got to figure it out, or, you know, being in a country you don't speak the language, and, you know, being in an arena in Turkey, and, you know, I got dropped off by a taxi, and, you know, I was a half an hour away from the hotel, and the arena was in the middle of nowhere, and, you know, just trying to figure out, you know, how you're going to get back.
Yeah, out of your comfort zone completely.
Yeah. You know, you're always out of your comfort zone, right? Yeah. So you get used to that, and you just say, hey, I'm going to find a way, you know. It might not be easy or efficient. It might take me 3 hours to get back to the hotel, but I'll get there. You know,
have you thought about coaching on the side to kind of scratch the itch a little bit, just as a hobby, as a passion project?
I mean, I think what I would like to do is just do like individual workouts with players that are around me.
Yeah.
And more so to just, so many kids need to be built up, right? There's so many kids lacking self-confidence that don't, you know, like teaching them about how they can be successful in whatever environment they're in, you know, to be a great teammate.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a great idea.
To be resilient, to have confidence in yourself, to play without fear, to move on to the next play, all these things. And, you know, so one of the things that I was worried about leaving coaching is as I've mentioned earlier in this podcast, is the biggest reward for me is impacting people, right? And trying to help them and develop them, help them grow. And as a coach, you know, it's built in. I got 12 guys every day that are my people that I can impact. And then on top of that, then there's the fans, you know, the kids that come to the summer camp and things like that. And I thought, man, when I leave coaching, you know, who am I going to impact? You know, where can I make my mark with being, helping our community and whatnot? And I just came to the conclusion that, okay, it's not going to be what I hoped was a grand scale of impacting a lot of people. But my goal now is just try to impact the people that are in my circle, people I come in contact with. So, you know, I have, you know, colleagues, people I work with that have sons and daughters that play basketball. So I said, hey, you know, if they want some workouts, I'll be happy to work with them. And, you know, because through the workouts, that's where I really could impact our players, you know.
Totally.
Lots of teachable moments.
That's a great idea. I feel like that's phenomenal. It comes down to mentorship again that we talked about that you did early on in your career with college kids, then with Freddie at Frankfurt and with other. I mean, it goes hand in hand, I think. And then it gives you also a avenue where you can shut off your regular day-to-day work, you know, the day-to-day grind. And you need some kind of meditation process or, you know, that you can kind of give your brain a break from the regular job.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you ready for my ATOs that I always throw out at people? And those
yeah,
are
let's do it.
Not X's and O's, but more philosophical ATOs.
Okay.
All right. So the first one, and it's just quick, and first thing that comes to mind, whatever you feel like is the right answer. The best advice you would give to your younger self, while whether it was a younger coach, yourself as a younger coach, or a younger person?
Don't be so afraid of failure. Do your best and go in with confidence. Decide how you want to do it. You know, make sure it's done with thought and that you've prepared. But then once you do that, go full bore without any, you got to do it without fear. You just got to go. Go if you're going 100%. And, be decisive in your decision making and believe that whatever decision you're going to make is the right one. You have to, even if you're not sure, you have to, Muhammad Ali once said, "Hey, I was a champion before I was a champion." So he believed he was a champion before he was a champion. And I think you have to have that mentality as a leader.
Best advice you would give to a young head coach?
Do your very best to hire the best assistants for you that fit you, that make up for your weaknesses, that can tell you the truth, that are going to give you valuable feedback. You know, there's feedback and there's valuable feedback. You know, the worst assistants are the ones that think they know it all but have never been a head coach, and they're spouting off all these things that are not really that valuable. They got to come to you with stuff that's valuable that you can believe and trust in and utilize. And as an assistant, you don't want to come with problems, come with solutions. Don't tell me the problem. Tell me how we can solve the problem, right? So as a head coach, you got to find people that can help you be the best you can be. And they make up for your weaknesses. They can give you valuable information. And they're loyal.
Best advice you would give a coach who's trying to transition into a new field?
I would say really try to investigate utilize your knowledge of yourself of what you're really, really good at as a coach and what field that could transition to. So, for example, with my field, I'm not a finance expert, but that's not the skill set that's going to make me successful as in my job. My job is with retirement plans for small businesses. What I need to do is develop relationships with small business owners and to gain their trust and to communicate clearly and simply, that skill set right there is what's going to make me successful. So identifying what your skill set is, what your best skill set is, and finding a job that you can use those skill sets in.
Most underrated part of coaching?
I think 90% of your success is made in the summer. So the players you choose. Because if you don't, one guy can ruin a team. One cancerous guy can destroy a team. You got to really do your very best to choose the right guys. Now, it's not fail safe, right? I mean, every draft we see guys that don't pan out. It's human nature. There is no formula that's guaranteed, but put a lot of effort into getting the right guys on the bus.
Most gifted book besides that's the one
well,
you gave
that's
me.
My number one for sure.
Atomic Habits.
Yeah.
Oh,
I've given
wow.
That, that's, right. Yeah, that's the book I've given the most.
I'm one of them.
Sorry.
So yeah, I'm not special enough to give you a book.
Yeah, I mean, that book is the most impactful book I've ever read about impacting myself.
Atomic Habits. What did you learn from there, from the most from that book?
That if you really want to stick with a habit, you've got to start super small and make it easy to get the habit in place. Don't worry about, don't go and start a workout plan and do it 2 times a week for an hour and a half. And you're not going to stick with it. You do it 5 minutes tomorrow or 2 minutes and then 2 minutes the next day. And then after 2 weeks, you're bumping it up. That's a huge, and then the identity that you think of yourself as a guy who works out, not as someone who's trying to start a workout.
If there was one quote that you could put on a billboard, that's a Tim Ferriss question too. I'm just being transparent. If there's one quote that you could put on a billboard for everybody to see and think about, whatever quote, whatever avenue that's from, what would you put on that billboard? It doesn't have to be a quote. It can be a statement or a sentence or a word that you feel like that's impactful and can make people think.
I would go back and I referenced it earlier, but I think it's a really important point for anybody. And I did write it down because I knew you were going to ask me. It's we do not learn from experience. We learn from reflecting on experience. And that's huge. I mean, and I think the ability to be a great teammate, if you cannot be reflective and if you cannot be constructively self-critical, you can't be a great teammate. You have to be able to think about a situation, analyze it, and you have to think about yourself, where you fit in that. And what's the reality of that and how you can improve? If you can't do that, you can't be a great teammate, in my opinion. And that's not just for teams. That's for family, relationships, any kind of team in the workplace.
Totally. And I feel like we can leave it at that as well, because I feel that one of the bigger things that I've heard lately, and it's recency bias, obviously, but also that you can learn a lot more from reflective losers than from winners who are not able to reflect. Because winners, not all of them get a sense of, oh, that I've barely won, you know, or we won, but we made some mistakes here or there. A lot of the winners forget how they won and what could have went wrong or what broke their way. Whereas losers that are able to reflect, they're able to reflect and see why they've lost, what they could have done different, and just having a critical mindset and being able to pick it all apart in order to navigate those waters and not make the same mistakes again.
Yeah. I mean, I would venture to say that we reflect a lot more and think about things a lot more when they've caused us pain, as opposed to when they haven't, you know. So when you win, you know, I would say I thought much more about games that I lost than games that I won, right? And I go back and say, hey, what could we have done better? A lot of times you'll take a win, you're like, all right, next game, let's move on. And when you lose, you're like, wait, what could we have done better here? Where were our mistakes? What were the key reasons we lost? So, you know, all the difficult moments in my life, caused me pain, and from that pain, reflection and how it could be done better, what I can take from this, how I can learn from this, how I can grow from this.
That's again, and we've finished a full circle again. Michael Jordan's mindset after being cut in high school and then making the team the next year. Now, when you lose and you take things personally, you take it to another level next time.
That's right. That's right.
All right, brother. We took it full circle. Okay. We're taking it home. Thanks for being a friend, first of all, and one of the best ones I have in my circle. It's good to have you in my corner. Thanks for talking about it. I hope I was not too I mean, it was direct, but I hope I was not too intrusive with everything. Yeah. I feel like this is very helpful, and it's also the graveyard of coaches that didn't make it as much bigger. Not everybody can be a Messina, a Kozlauskas, and whatever. Yeah. So I think that this is a very eye-opening episode for many young coaches, and just to have an idea of also what other avenues there are and how to navigate those waters.
Yeah, well, I hope some coach can take something of it and have it help them in some way. If so, then you know that's great.
Where can people find you?
Where
can people find you?
They can find me. I'm not really on the internet. I mean, it's, you know, not being it, but they can email me. That's no problem. I'd be happy to.
Facebook, LinkedIn. You're not using any of it.
Oh, yeah, my LinkedIn, yeah. They can hit me LinkedIn. On LinkedIn. I haven't changed it yet. It still says coach. I need to change it.
It says leader also on there, I saw. So you're,
that's right, you know.
Yeah, that applies to every field.
Exactly, yeah. I hope so. That's my goal.
Yeah, so if you want to reach out to Simon, go to LinkedIn and find him there, Simon Cody. Thanks, Simon. Yes. Thanks for being there. And everybody, stay tuned. There's more content coming. Thanks.